Ever find yourself like just looking at a product and thinking, wait, could they trademark that? I mean, we're talking about the design itself, not just a logo or a name. And, you know, that's kind of what happened in this case that really changed the game for trade dress law in Re Morton Norwich Products Incorporated.
This is a fun one.
It is a fun one.
Yeah, this is one of those foundational cases that if you're interested in trade dress, you really have to read.
You have to know it.
Yeah, it's fascinating how this case, you know, about just this like simple spray
Yeah.
bottle had such a ripple effect. I mean, it really set the stage for how we view functionality when it comes to trademarking product designs.
And the big takeaway here is huge for anyone listening that, you know, if you're thinking about protecting your designs, functionality is not an automatic roadblock to
Right.
getting a trademark. But
Exactly.
before we get too far ahead,
Yeah.
let's set the scene. So, what was so special about this spray bottle
Right.
that landed Morton Norwich in court?
So picture this. You're back in the 70s. All right. Morton Norwich is selling all sorts of household products in these distinctive spray bottles,
Okay.
like kind of a rounded rhomboid shape.
Yeah.
They're doing great, selling millions of them. So naturally, they want to protect this design.
Makes sense.
So they had patents on parts of the spray mechanism itself,
Okay.
but they went a step further and applied for a trademark on the shape of the bottle.
Okay, so they had patents on the functional parts, but they wanted to trademark the look. Okay, that makes sense, but it sounds like they hit a snag.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. So both the United States Patent and Trademark Office, or USPTO,
Of course.
and the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, the TTT,
Right.
rejected their application. And their reasoning, they claimed the design was merely functional and therefore not eligible for trademark protection.
Merely functional. That sounds like there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, almost every product has some kind of function.
Right. You're absolutely right. And this is where it gets interesting. You see, there's a distinction between something being de facto functional and de jure functional. Think about it like a chair.
Okay.
Okay, a chair is de facto functional because we use it to sit,
Right.
but the specific design of that chair, you know, whether it's a rocking chair or a dining chair, that could be de jure functional
Got it.
and protectable.
I see the difference. So a plain old spray bottle is de facto functional, but Morton Norwich was arguing that their unique shape was more than that.
Precisely.
Okay.
To determine de jure functionality, the court laid out a four-factor test, and we still use this test today, and that's why understanding this case is so important.
Okay, let's get into those factors.
Okay. All
So what's the first one on the list?
right, so the first thing the court considered was whether there were utility patents that focused specifically on the design's functional benefits.
Okay.
Now, remember, Morton Norwich did have patents, but those were for the spray mechanism, not
Price.
the overall shape of the bottle.
So even though they had patents related to the bottle, those patents didn't claim that the shape itself was crucial for the invention to work.
Exactly. And that was a point in Morton Norwich's favor because it suggested that the shape wasn't inherently tied to the bottle's function as a sprayer.
Makes sense. So what's the next factor we need to consider?
All right, so the second factor looks at how the company advertised the product. Did they highlight the bottle shape as being functionally superior?
I'm really curious to hear this. Did Morton Norwich try to sell the bottle's shape as like a key selling point?
Interestingly, no. Their advertising focused mainly on the effectiveness of the product inside the bottle, not the unique shape of the container itself.
So two factors down. And so far, it seems like the shape wasn't being touted as something essential to the function of the bottle.
Right.
What's the third piece of this puzzle?
This one's pretty straightforward. The court looked at whether competitors were using different shapes for similar products.
I'm guessing this is where things started to look really good for Morton Norwich.
Yeah.
I mean, there are tons of differently shaped spray bottles out there,
You
right?
got it.
Yeah.
The market was full of spray bottles in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
Right.
And this was key because it demonstrated that the rounded rhomboid shape wasn't essential for the bottle to do its job, hold liquid and spray it.
So if other companies could compete effectively with different shapes, it stands to reason that Morton Norwich's specific design wasn't crucial from a purely functional standpoint.
Precisely, it was all about proving that there were viable alternatives out there.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, the fourth and final factor focuses on the manufacturing process. Was this particular shape significantly cheaper or easier to manufacture?
It's a good question. Was there anything about the shape that made it like a no-brainer from a production perspective?
Actually, no. There was no evidence to suggest that the court even pointed out that plastic bottles can be made in practically any shape without affecting their ability to hold and dispense liquid.
So let me recap. No patents on the shape itself, advertising focused on the product, not the bottle. Plenty of alternative designs in the market, and no evidence that this shape was uniquely cost-effective to produce. It sounds like Morton Norwich had a pretty strong case that their bottle wasn't de jure functional.
They did. And to really drive this point home, the court used a really interesting analogy.
Okay.
Car grills.
Car grills. Now, that's an unexpected twist.
Right.
How do car grills relate to spray bottles and trademarks?
Think about it this way. Just like different car companies can have distinctive grills without affecting the engine underneath the spray bottle, can have different shapes without impacting its core function as a container and dispenser. The shape in both cases is more about aesthetics and brand recognition than essential functionality.
I see what you mean. That's a great analogy. Mm-hmm. It helps to visualize how a design element can be distinctive and recognizable without being absolutely crucial to the product's core function.
Exactly.
So after all this legal back and forth, what was the final verdict? Did Morton Norwich win the right to trademark their spray bottle shape?
Well, the court didn't give a simple yes or no answer. Instead, they sent the case back down to the lower courts to be reevaluated, but this time with a focus on the distinctiveness of the bottle, not just its functionality.
Hold on, so they kick it back down to the lower courts, but it was still a win for Morton Norwich.
Right.
I'm a bit confused.
Remember how we talked about de jure and de facto functionality?
Yeah.
The court essentially said that the TT got it wrong by assuming that the bottle's shape was automatically de jure functional just because it served a purpose. And this was huge for trade dress law.
Because it opened the door to trademarking designs that were useful without being essential.
Exactly. And that's precisely what we'll delve into next. The court basically threw Morton Norwich a lifeline by shifting the focus from pure functionality to distinctiveness. This was a major turning point, not just for this case, but for trade dress law in general.
Okay, so you're saying that even if a design has a function, it might still be protectable as a trademark if it's distinctive enough.
Yes.
That's really interesting, but what exactly does distinctiveness mean in this context?
Yeah, so distinctiveness, or what's often called secondary meaning in trade dress law, means that consumers have come to associate a specific design feature with a particular brand. You know, it's about creating that mental link between the look of something and the company behind it.
So it's not enough for a design to be unique or even aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
It has to actually be recognizable as a symbol of a specific brand.
Exactly. Think about a plain cylindrical water bottle.
Okay.
It serves its purpose, but it doesn't tell you anything about the brand of water inside. But now imagine that bottle has a unique contoured shape or a specific color combination that consumers instantly connect with a particular brand. That's when it starts to become distinctive.
So in the case of Morton Norwich, they had to show that their spray bottle shape wasn't just different, but that shoppers actually recognized it as belonging to their brand.
That's right. And that's often the trickiest part. Proving secondary meaning can involve things like consumer surveys, looking at advertising campaigns, analyzing how long the design has been in use. It's a real deep dive into the minds of consumers.
Yeah, it makes sense that it wouldn't be easy to prove. So did Morton Norwich manage to convince the courts that their bottle design had acquired that special secondary meaning?
Well, we don't actually know the final outcome because the case was sent back down for further review. The court basically said, hey, you need to go back and reconsider the distinctiveness issue in light of our ruling on functionality.
So it was a bit of a cliffhanger ending.
Yeah.
We don't know if they ultimately won the trademark.
We don't. But the fact that the case was sent back with this new emphasis on distinctiveness was a huge victory for Morton Norwich. It gave them a fighting chance to secure that trademark protection.
This whole case really underscores the importance of thinking about trade dress from the very beginning, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. If you're a business developing a product with a unique design, you need to start gathering evidence early on to support a claim of distinctiveness down the line. You can't just assume it will happen organically.
So document everything.
Yeah.
How you're using the design sales figures, maybe even run some early consumer surveys.
Hmm. Exactly. It's like building a case file before you even know you'll need it. But it could be the difference between securing valuable intellectual property rights and seeing your design become generic.
You know what's so fascinating about this case is that it's not just about spray bottles. The principles at play here apply to so many products.
You're right. It's like a blueprint for understanding how courts evaluate the interplay between design and function.
Speaking of blueprints, you mentioned that the four-factor test from Morton Norwich is still widely used today. Were there any other landmark cases that built upon this foundation and further shaped trade dress law?
Definitely one that comes to mind is Qualitex Company versus Jacobson Products Company Incorporated. This case, which went all the way to the Supreme Court in 1995, really pushed the boundaries of trade dress protection.
Oh, this sounds like a good one. What happened in Qualitex?
In that case, the Supreme Court held that even a single color, if it has acquired secondary meaning, can be protected as a trademark. Think about the color pink in Owens Corning insulation, for example. It was a landmark decision that expanded the scope of what could be considered protectable trade dress.
Wow. So we've gone from spray bottles to car grills to a single color. It seems like the legal landscape surrounding trade dress is constantly evolving.
That's true. And it just goes to show that staying up to date on the latest case law is crucial, especially if you're working with clients who are developing new products and designs.
I'm starting to feel like I need a law degree just to keep up. But seriously, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive. Before we move on, I think it's worth taking a moment to reflect on everything we've learned.
I agree. It's easy to get lost in the details, but it's important to step back and see the bigger picture.
We've covered a lot of ground today, from that nitty-gritty, you know, four-factor functionality test to the power of proving secondary meaning. And we even ventured into the world of color trademarks.
Yeah.
Which kind of blew my mind.
It is amazing how much depth there is to trade dress law. It's like this hidden world that most people don't even realize exists.
It really is. Yeah. But for businesses, especially those, you know, creating new products or branding.
Right.
Understanding this world is crucial. I mean, it can literally make or break their success.
Absolutely. The Morton Norwich case, even though it's from the 70s, is still incredibly relevant today. It set a precedent that continues to shape how we think about design functionality and brand identity.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the key takeaways you hope our listeners walk away with?
Well, first and foremost, I want everyone to remember that functionality isn't a black and white issue. Just because a design serves a purpose doesn't automatically disqualify it from trademark protection.
Right. It's that distinction between de facto and de jure functionality. Like a chair is meant for sitting, but that doesn't mean every chair design is off limits for a trademark.
Exactly. And the Morton Norwich case gave us a framework for analyzing those nuances. The four-factor test is a powerful tool for businesses to assess their own designs and understand their chances of securing trade dress protection.
And beyond functionality, proving secondary meaning is absolutely critical. Consumers need to connect that design with your brand. It's not just about being different. It's about building recognition and association.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And for businesses, that means being proactive, gather evidence early on, document your design choices, and track how consumers are responding to your products.
It's like that saying, the best defense is a good offense. But in this case, it's about protecting your brand identity from the get-go.
Precisely. Don't wait until you're in a legal battle to start thinking about trade dress. By then, it might be too late.
This has been such an insightful conversation. I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for the complexity and importance of trade dress law.
I'm glad to hear that it's a fascinating area of law and one that's constantly evolving.
And who knows, maybe the next landmark trade dress case will be about something just as unexpected as a spray bottle shape.
Maybe it'll be about the shape of a podcast microphone.
Now that's something to think about. Thanks again for joining me today for this deep dive.
It was my pleasure. Always happy to geek out about trade dress law.
And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We hope you found this episode informative and engaging. Until next time, keep those design ideas flowing and your trademarks protected.